fourth version of the road.
Right.
Right.
Don't do that, maybe, don't.
I've got your.
Morning, Jeff.
Morning, Your Honors. I'm Virginia Albrecht, here today for the National Association of Home Builders, and with me at council table is Hillary Bricky and Dwayne Desiderio. This is a challenge to a suite of general nationwide permits that were issued first by the Corps of Engineers in 2000 for 5 years. After 2 years, they terminated the permits and reissued new permits in 2002. We amended the complaint and continued on. The challenge is that the Corps of Engineers has failed to explain the basis for the decisions it made in these permits.
Don't you have a threshold hurdle to cross before we get to that?
Mootness?
That's the one I had in mind.
Right. Yes, the government has brought that up. I think what we
you
think.
You weren't really surprised that they brought it up.
No, no, and actually we thought long and hard. This is a very difficult situation because these permits are issued, well, they can be issued for up to 5 years. They don't have to last for 5 years, and in fact, when we started this case, the Corps had issued the permits for 5 years and then terminated the permits after 2 years, which forced us to then start over again. While we then continued to litigate the case against jurisdictional defenses that were in front of your honors a couple of years ago. And finally, after 8 years, have gotten to the merits. And while the case was pending on appeal, the permits that were in front of us expired, and the Corps issued new permits. The new permits duplicate almost precisely what was wrong with the old permits. And what was wrong with the old permits was that the Corps announced conditions and then in justification for the conditions just recited the statutory term. We need to do this because it will meet minimal adverse environmental effects. That's what Section 404E of the Clean Water Act says. The Corps may issue these kinds of permits if it determines that they meet minimal adverse environmental effects. They said over and over again, it meets minimal adverse environmental effects. And in the 2007 record, in fact, people came in and said, hey, you're relying on minimal adverse environmental effects. Tell us what this means. And the Corps said, quote, we maintain our position that we are not going to define this term. So we think this is the classic, capable of repetition, yet evading review.
That's your only hope, isn't it? If we don't hold it, it's capable of repetition, yet evading review, then you're out on mootness, are you not?
Yes, and we would be.
Now how can we say that a five-year permit inherently evades review?
Well, I wouldn't say it inherently evades
Doesn't
review.
Doesn't it have to inherently evade review in order for you to prevail on that?
Well,
I mean,
having
it evade one time does not per se establish that it evades review.
Well, actually, it's evading review twice. Because, and it's actually not necessarily a five-year permit, and that's a really important point. It's a permit that may be issued for 5 years, but the Corps retains absolute discretion to terminate that permit before 5 years, which is what happened in the 2000 permits. In 1996, in the predecessor permits, the Corps issued these permits for 2 years, and then they got to 1998. Pardon?
Today are five-year permits, right?
The ones that they've issued in 2007.
And these have lapsed, right?
Pardon?
And these have lapsed, right? The 5 years is over.
The 5 years is over.
Right.
And they've repeated precisely the same error.
They did change the standard, but they may not have.
They have continued to decline to explain what they're doing.
Right.
And
nonetheless, coming back to whether it evades review, why should we think that the new permits issued under the new standard would evade review?
Well, Your Honor.
In fact, seeking administrative review, I mean, seeking the judicial review actually on that, right?
Yes, we're seeking your review.
But you already have brought action on the new permits of the district court.
Right, and the government, not surprisingly, has raised jurisdictional defenses to that. And although that case.
What jurisdictional defense have they raised to that?
They're raising standing. And actually, they've insinuated standing in this case.
Well, they may have a hard time with standing, given, but that's for another day.
But see, that's the.
Given the history of this case, they may have a hard time with standing in the next case.
Right, and we believe that. And we believe that these jurisdictional defenses are not meritorious. But nonetheless, they take time and make it very difficult to get to the merits. And that is our challenge.
5 years is a period of time. Would it not be hard for us to say that that's going to evade review when you've got 5 years under the new permit to get it reviewed?
Well, I think that actually we went back and we put in our brief, our reply brief at, I think, page 8. We looked at exactly these kinds of challenges that the National Association of Home Builders has been involved in. Facial challenges to administrative decisions, either of the Corps or of the Fish and Wildlife Service, and just to see how long it actually takes to get to the merits. And we picked out six that were pretty much on all fours with this. They were facial challenges. And what we found was it took generally 6.5 years.
A, six is a pretty small universe to drive a rule from, isn't it?
Well, we're not. I think, actually, I wouldn't say it's a rule for all time, and I think the point of the jurisprudence.
Well, you could find six where you could get an average that was over 5 years.
Yeah, you could think, yes, but don't think that. You could think that, but don't think that.
Counsel, let me try this another way. So the only thing that you have left from the original challenge that's an issue, that is arguably an issue, because the 1/10 acre is gone. So you don't have anything left that you're quibbling over except the minimal adverse environmental effects. Your demand that there has to be a definition of that. So putting this in the best light for you, you could argue that, look, we raised particulars in a policy issue. We raised a general issue that would be applicable to all permits. That they cannot be issued sans a definition of that term.
Mm-hmm.
Any permit that does that is flawed. And so that doesn't go away. And we have standing to continue to pursue that question, so that's not moot as to that question. That's still live. The court still has jurisdiction. Let's assume, and there's some strange case law where you might be able to argue that way. So what is there to decide? Because isn't the application of minimal adverse environmental effects dependent upon the circumstances in each determination?
Well, I think
what
that
is it? What is your best shot on the merits? What is it? How would you even justify it?
I think our best shot on the merits, and actually, you're right. This was a much broader case. We've come and crystallized exactly, actually, what was the centerpiece of the case at the beginning, which was in order for the National Association of Home Builders and the rest of the public to participate in a meaningful way in this rulemaking, and for this court to be able to review intelligently the decisions that are made by the Corps under this. When the Corps says we are exacting these conditions because they meet minimal adverse environmental effects, the APA requires that they must explain what that means. We don't think the statute requires them to define minimal adverse effects. We do think the APA, and this is a classic issue about finding.
But you don't have an overarching policy requirement, and you don't have an overarching. In other words, you are not requesting as a matter of principle that in every situation they have to have a definition that they have established that will automatically be applied in each case.
I'm trying to be clear, because what we want them to do is to explain how they make this determination.
In each case?
Well, in each case that they adopt these general permits. And so not when they apply the general permits. They apply these general permits 80,000 times a year.
And in each case, the reason may be different.
They might be different.
The minimal adverse effects may be different.
I don't know, because they haven't actually...
Well, but you see, this, you're either in or out of the mootness box, depending upon how you answer that question. In other words, if you were arguing that the statute and/or regulations say, in effect, that whenever you have permits, there has to be an overarching definition of X.
Mm-hmm.
That controls. That's one thing. Then you might be able to survive the mootness inquiry. You may still lose on the merits, but you might be
right.
able to. If you're saying that in each case we need to find something depending upon the circumstances that defines it, then you got a big mootness problem.
No, and actually...
Because each one of these five-year determinations is different.
Right, okay.
And the case isn't ripe.
I think I'm following. I hope I'm understanding. We think, as a general matter, when they issue these permits, they need to make an explanation. They need to explain. They have cited minimal adverse effects, and that means they need to explain what minimal adverse effects means.
Now, you're going to point at the end of this paragraph that you're giving me now. You're going to point to me something in the record that indicates that that's the way you've always argued the case, that the statute requires an overarching definition of minimal effects that will apply in every case from here on in.
The statute requires an
overarching. Is that your argument?
I think that the statute, well.
See, because then that could survive mootness. You could have argued, look, we're not talking about the acreage or anything. We're talking about the statute and rules require that every time they do this, this has to be here. It's not here.
Right.
And so it doesn't matter that this goes away in 5 years. That claim is still before.
Oh, right.
It's
no.
A legal claim. It has to be there. Where is that?
What we've said that from the very beginning,
and with respect to this 2000 whatever,
the 2002 permit, we said it in our 2000 complaint, we said it in our 2002, we've said it ever since. And furthermore, there's this interesting interplay between what the statute says and what the APA requires. And the statute says that the Corps under 404E may issue these permits if they determine that the permits that they're about to issue meet this minimal adverse effects
right.
determination. That idea of a determination, that use of that language, when Congress says you must determine, is a way that Congress is saying you've got to exercise your brain on this idea.
Given the particulars of the circumstance, so that means each time they do it, they've got to make that determination, as opposed to having a single rule that applies every time they do it. Are
you at all concerned that if we were to rule that these permits are invalid, you don't have permits at all? Does that help your client if we just do away with all the permits?
Well, I think that court doesn't have to, when you have an APA claim, the court doesn't have to vacate what's happened.
Well, that's a matter of law dispute.
Right, right. I think actually, in a way, what you need to do in these prior situations, or, you know, capable of repetition yet evading review, you need to think about, you know, where are we? What kind of relief can we order in this unusual situation?
I have thought about that, and I don't recall ever having a case, if we go back the difficulty of understanding what your remedy is here. I don't recall ever having a case where we have ordered an agency to define a term for across-the-board use.
I did find there's this Al Pharma case in which the issue was what was the meaning of bioequivalency. We cited it in our opinions. And in the 1995 decision in that case, the court ordered, I think it was FDA, to define this term. It came back about 10 years later. And they had defined the term, and the court was dissatisfied. So the case is still going on. Actually, in terms of what we're asking for, we think that if you declare, first of all, that what they've done is defective and doesn't meet the APA or doesn't satisfy the Clean Water Act, certainly that is very important recognition of what their legal obligations are.
We're not going to give an advisory opinion on a moot case.
Yeah.
Well, it wouldn't actually be an advisory opinion because...
Well, now, you would use it otherwise, but the legal notion is it's advisory.
Well, actually...
We don't have a case of controversy before us. We can't opine on, gee, that prior permit looked bad.
But we think there is a live controversy, and that's why there is this prior exemption or prior policy out there that allows you to take a look at what is going on. Are they continuing to repeat their errors, which they are? And they've been doing this consistently, and they have this fixed legal position, as in, for example, NWS versus Coastal. And their fixed legal position is, we are not going to define this term, but we are going to continue to rely on it. And that really puts us in this untenable position. Now, if you said to us, okay, we're not going to review this, it's moot, we would have, say these permits that are now in effect actually last 5 years, which is, there is no assurance. The Corps can terminate these permits anytime, and has in the past. But say we had 5 years, there's no assurance at all that we could get through and get to the merits.
Have you argued anywhere in this litigation as to what you think that term should mean, should be the basis for this general rule?
We haven't gotten a chance to get to that.
Well, I mean, that's confirming what I'm suspecting, that you're not arguing the case. You have never argued the case in a way that I think avoids mootness. That is saying that as a matter of law, they have to promulgate a rule that's binding in all permit cases defining the minimum adverse effects. That has not been your tack.
You're
right in the mootness bag.
I'm totally frustrated.
Well, you'll have to think about it when you sit down.
I mean, all right, I will think
way,
about
that's
it.
That's the way you arguably can avoid mootness. You may not win on the merits, but if you're not arguing that, then it's case by case. It's when each new permit period comes up, that's the one that's...
Are you saying you mean that they could, for the 2000 permits, come up with one definition of minimal adverse effects, and then for the 2002 permits come up with...
I'm asking you what you're...
No, we are not saying that. If that's what you're thinking, I'm saying...
No, I'm asking.
No, we are saying that
it's your case, not mine.
All right. Well, no, but I'm trying to understand, because we're talking a little, but I'm trying to get understand what it is that's troubling you. We do think there needs to be one umbrella standard in the meaning of this term, which really drives their statutory requirements. And we do think there has to be an umbrella understanding of that. And that is why we are asking the court to order them to tell us what this means. I think I'm out of time. But do you have any more questions, or shall I let the government have a shot?
Unless my colleagues have questions, you are out of time. We'll give you back a couple of minutes for rebuttal.
We'll okay, thanks.
May it please the court, Ryan Nelson on behalf of the Army Corps of Engineers. The home builder's challenge to the 2002 Nationwide Permit 39 fails because it is moot and it fails on the merits. First, the challenge is moot because the 2002 nationwide permit has expired by statute and no longer has any legal force. It was in place for 5 years, which this court has held in a number of cases is long enough to avoid the evading the review.
Are you understanding the line of question I'm asking?
I do.
All right. So your response is what? I mean, if there are a lot of analogous mootness type cases where this court and other courts have said if part of the issue, if there was one thing that was clearly resolvable and cannot recur, that's one thing, it's gone. But if there is something else that the parties had standing to challenge, and it's a general rule that would be applicable both in the case at hand and in the future, and that party will be affected by future determinations, so they have standing going forward, and it would be right to consider it now, it's not moot. Now, why is that not the case here?
There's two responses to that, Judge Edwards. First of all, they've got to clear the evading review standard. And any way you put
No. Analytically, no. That's what I'm trying to get you. Put it in my framework, if you will.
But your framework seems to go.
It's not about. In other words, if I file a challenge, the one of the seminal cases, Supreme Court. An employer challenged the welfare benefits to strikers. I'm blanking on the name. The strike ended. The case is still in court. They were challenging two things. They wanted a declaration against the strike. That's moot. There was nothing to give. There is no more strike. They also wanted that state policy declared unlawful. They wanted a legal ruling, and even though the strike, which caused the problem, was gone, they wanted that policy removed because there could be another strike between these parties in the future. So going forward, the court said, yes, absolutely, we can decide that case.
Yeah, I understand.
So why isn't the minimal adverse effects in that box?
Well, the questions you're asking are going to the capable of review prong. I still contend you've got the strike example is different because the strike was not lasting for 5 years, okay?
No, they're not going to the capable. They're going to whether or not there was, the court had jurisdiction over a question properly before. Take the strike out of it.
Right.
And so you had the question of, for example, if you had a rulemaking which said we're not going to define minimal adverse effects, and they're a party that is affected by your rules and they have standing, they can raise that, right?
Right.
Okay.
Correct.
That's what I'm talking about.
No, that's, I mean, I guess what it goes to is this an APA review, record review case, or is this a policy that they're challenging? And our contention is that this can only be viewed in the sense of an APA review on the record of what the agency did. The agency had thousands of comments before it. It had to make a determination of how it was going to define minimal impacts here. And let's be clear, there is a definition here. I mean, if I just want to go to how they defined this in the record. If you look at the Joint Appendix 267, what the court actually said is, we maintain our position that the term minimal effects as used in the context of the nationwide permit program cannot be simply defined. It didn't say, we're not going to define this. It said, this is a very difficult definition. It then goes on to give a list of factors, and this is how a lot of statutory terms are defined in environmental law.
This is in what, the rule that was
This is in the 2002 rule. And I think that really kind of guts home builders' case here, because this is not a policy that they're challenging, which might...
Or a failure of policy.
That's correct. I mean, it is a record review where they looked at the comments, they applied it to how a nationwide permit operates, and they said... we can't simply define this. And bear in mind, the home builders are up here saying, oh, you didn't define it. In the Fourth Circuit Buhlen case, which is a very good case on this point, the industry was arguing to the Fourth Circuit, it's an undefinable term.
Well, that's part of what I was asking. Even giving the other side the best read, is there anything to be defined? Is it so dependent upon the circumstances of each case? That's the other side of this problem.
It is a problem, and the Buhlen case addresses that. And I think Judge Luttig in that case wrote a very good opinion that kind of lays out the balancing act that the court has to go through here between setting standards and factors that really do have minimal impacts on the one hand, and then also allowing post permit review by regional and district offices.
I think you caught the question I was going to interrupt with, and that is, you wouldn't concede that you have to have an overarching definition, would you?
No, we don't concede that. And I think they've done, if you go back and look at Joint Appendix 267, the Corps has done a good job here. They haven't defined it precisely, but again, nobody came forward and said, hey, we've got the make or break definition that you've got to adopt, including home builders here. And if any, we're going to be going through this again in 2012. If any party has an idea, the Corps is all ears on that, but no one's come forward with anything yet. And just another point that I want to also make clear is that the court has satisfied the statutory requirement here. They keep saying, well, you never made a determination of minimal effects. But again, if you look at Joint Appendix 465, this is the decision document. And what the court did was they walked through and they said, based on reported use of this nationwide permit in calendar year 2000, the Corps estimates that this nationwide permit will be used approximately 1,500 times per year on a national basis, with approximately 250 acres of wetlands impacts. The Corps estimates that approximately 1,500 acres of compensatory mitigation will be required to offset these impacts. The court did look at the environmental impacts here, but bear in mind, that was only one factor of what they actually had to do. But they found, reasonably so, under Chevron, that there were minimal environmental impacts from this nationwide permit. I think coming back to the mootness point, the government...
Did they remind me, at least in your review, did they claim that the whatever your definition of minimal adverse effects in this case was defective or wrong, or did they simply say that judgment was rendered with no definition at all?
They basically said judgment was rendered with no definition of all. They make this great claim that, oh, well, you just repeat the statutory phrase, 323 times and you never define it. And that's just inaccurate. And, the other thing to realize here is there's a difference. There's really two arguments here. One is, does the half-acre standard, or that's not even the argument. The argument is, does the nationwide permit in totality with General Condition 18 that states that no toxic waste can be put into the water, General Condition 19 that says that you have to minimize environmental impacts. When you take all of the restrictions that are placed on the permit in the totality, has the Corps made an adequate determination that there's no more than minimal environmental impacts? And what I read to you states that there is. The next question is, how do you get to that half-acre determination? And that is not limited solely by environmental effects. In fact, to the contrary, the statute is set up to put this into kind of buckets of permits. You've got the general permits and you've got the individual permits. And in allocating the line between those buckets of permits, you really can you take into account cost savings, which the Corps did. You can take into account administrative efficiency, which the Corps did. You can take into account efficiency for the public. You can also take into account simplification for the Corps, for the public, which the Corps did. What they did in adopting this half-acre limitation is they said, we've got a whole range of permits, some of which have one-quarter acre limitations, some of which have three-acre limitations, and they simplified that. And those are all permissible interpretations of the statute by the Corps in making a determination of what that half-acre standard would be. So in summary, this appeal really should be dismissed as moot.
Just to prolong that discussion, I believe the case Judge Edwards was referring to might be the Super Tire Engineering Company.
Yes.
That was a declaratory judgment action, was it not? Or at least part of Justice Blackmun wrote was not moot.
That's my recollection.
So that would be a bit different than an APA review.
I think that's right.
And that's essentially what I'm querying the other side on, what was the nature of the complaint here, declaration. Yeah, that's right.
I mean, and I agree with that. I mean, I still think that particularly within the context of an APA review, that this court does have to look at the evading review standard, and I actually think that the court doesn't need to go any further than that. I mean,
even in Super Tire, they dismissed most of the case was moved. It was right. Only the economic effect of the continuing policy.
Right. So again, I mean, from the government's perspective, we'd like to see this case dismissed as moot, because it's really going to cause problems if we get into a situation where five-year permits can continually be challenged. And one final point, the chart on the reply brief at 8, I mean, if you really look at those cases, I mean, as Judge Sentelle noted, I mean, who knows what kind of a sampling that is, but there's five cases there. Three of those cases, the three cases that did last longer than 5 years, those were up. They had actually already gone to the Court of Appeals and had been back down and actually received a second decision from the district court. So, I mean, I don't think that this court wants to get out into adopting a standard where...
just one more small question on that, and I keep prolonging. Assuming we say it's moot, why isn't the appellate correct that we then have to order the vacatur of the district court decision?
That's a good question. The answer to that is because... it is final. The district court decision is final as to parties who have not appealed here. So, what what this court could do.
How about vacant the rest of this part?
That is possible, and what this court could do. What this court could do, I would submit, is remand it to the district court to make that determination, because this is a pretty complicated case with a lot of issues that were raised in the district court below. And I think the district court's going to be in the best position to really articulate which of those portions of its decision were solely related to home builders' claims and which were not. So, absent any other questions, I would ask this court to dismiss it. The case is moot, the appeal is moot, or in the alternative, to affirm the district court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Yeah, you were out of time, but we'll give you back 2 minutes for rebuttal, counsel.
Well, first of all, in answer to Judge Edwards, they do have a legal obligation under the APA to articulate what minimal adverse environmental effects means. It should be overarching, and it should apply to all permits. But how it's applied in any given case may be different, depending on what kind of a permit they're issuing. But the need and the obligation to explain that term persists. So I don't think the case is moot for that reason. On the evading review point, we're not asking you to set a standard. I think what the cases say is, look at what happens. It's true, as counsel says, that some of these cases have been up and back. That is typical of facial challenges to administrative action in this circuit, where the government raises standing, mootness, ripeness, or ripeness, finality issues. We need to take those up to the D.C. Circuit, talk to you, go back and litigate. So that prolongs the litigation. That's the nature of these facial challenges here. So I think the point of the cases is to take a look at what are the reality of these cases. You don't have to establish a hard and fast rule. And in fact, Judge Wright in NWF versus Costell says a hard and fast rule could provoke mischief, so we don't want that. Lastly, I want to remind you that the Corps has used this same terminology, minimal adverse environmental effects, to justify a 10-acre permit, a 3-acre permit, and now a half-acre permit.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I see any problem with that, counsel. That is an evolving standard. We presume agencies that are in ongoing regulatory situations are going to be changing their standards.
I think they could change. But they always need to explain.
Yeah, and that may be the case. And if we get an appeal or a review of an adjudication, we can see whether they explain or not. In fact, the bioequivalence case that you mentioned, that was a case-specific review, wasn't it?
Pardon?
Wasn't that a case-specific review where Judge Buckley went through and cited the different cases where there'd been bioequivalency determinations and said, you have to give us an explanation? I don't think we even there ordered a regulatory definition of bioequivalence. I may be wrong.
Oh, I thought you did. Well, when it came back, I know the court was critical in saying the definition was not good enough.
The first time when Judge Buckley wrote the opinion and it went back because it didn't have an explanation of bioequivalence.
Right. And I thought
the court said they had to adopt a regulatory definition. I think they did adopt one. But I think what the court was, they said they had to explain it.
Right.
Was that what happened?
Right. Okay. Well, that's what we're asking for, an explanation of this word, of these words, minimal adverse environmental effects. So,
I'm thinking you're beyond your rebuttal time now, but you were at the end of it before I started talking.
Okay.
I'm going to keep you, Eddie.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Case is submitted. Give us a recess.
Stand, please. It's awful.